So we're in the middle of a series right now called Purposeful Christians. This is going to be the last Sunday of the series for the time being, because we're going to break for Christmas beginning next week. And then after the Christmas season, we'll come back to the series and we'll finish it. So we'll have to see. We'll take a test after Christmas, see how well you paid attention today. So you might want to get your pens out, take some notes. If you get bored, I put a little blueprint in there. You can color in the dotted lines and, you know, if you want to stay awake. But when I graduated from college, I moved to live with my parents in South Carolina. And then the reason I did that, I went to college up here in the north. But the reason I did that is so that I could live somewhere rent-free. That's a big plus. Rent-free, so that I could get a job and put nearly all of my money on my school debt. That was my plan. I'm gonna go down there. I'm gonna live with them, and as long as they let me live there for free, then I'm gonna take basically all the money I earn from my job. I want to put it on my school debt and get rid of it, and take care of that before anything else. And so, in the process of looking for a job that was going to pay me well enough to make that worthwhile, I interviewed with this gentleman that my dad was connected to, that he was in distribution with Red Bull, the Red Bull energy drink company. And the job that I was interviewing for was to drive one of those delivery vans full of Red Bull. And you know, the irony of all of this today is, I can't tell you the last time I saw a Red Bull truck, but I was going to tell this story this morning. And yesterday, I think it was yesterday or the day before, I drove past a Red Bull truck. And I thought to myself, either I'm just paying attention for them now, or this is an odd coincidence that I actually drove past the actual job that I was interviewing for that I was going to share with you today. But the job was to drive one of those trucks and then stop at gas stations and businesses and keep them stocked up with Red Bull. It seemed pretty easy, seemed pretty straightforward, the job. And it was going to pay quite a bit to start, and so that was, you know, that was what I was most interested in, so that was fairly appealing. So I didn't take the job. I know that sounds weird, but I didn't take the job. See, eventually I got a job working for a refrigeration company, which I ended up really enjoying. I learned a lot, and I really loved that job. But one of the reasons that I didn't pursue this job with Red Bull is because during the interview, this gentleman that was interviewing me, he told me that I must love the product. That's what he said. He's like, you have to love Red Bull. You have to love this product. He said I drink Red Bull every day. I love the product. You've got to love the product. He said I have to believe in the product, because and that he believes in the mission of Red Bull. He gets it. And the mission of Red Bull, in case you're curious, is to give wings to people and ideas. First of all, I didn't even understand the mission, let alone believe in the mission. I'm not sure, but he was all about it. He's like, you got to believe in the mission. You got to love the product. You got to be all in on this. And he was all about that. And I wasn't. Right? The thing is, I just wanted to make money and work off my school debt. I had maybe one Red Bull in my entire life up to that point in interviewing for this job. So very clearly, I didn't believe in the product. I wasn't passionate about the product. I honestly couldn't care less about the mission. I just wanted to drive the truck and load the machines. And so I was clearly, by his description, I was clearly not cut out to drive a van and deliver Red Bull. I didn't love the product, and I didn't believe in the mission, and so I guess that it wasn't the job for me. And so I didn't take the job. So I walked out, because I was like, this guy is like levels way above me with his love for this can of energy drink. And I wonder, though, I wonder if there are a lot of people like that with Christianity, right? Where the statistics suggest that in America, there are people just like me with that Red Bull job. There are people like that with Christianity in America, where they like the idea of salvation, right? They love the reward at the end, but when pressed Do they care about the product? Do they care about the substance of what's in it? Do they care about the mission? Are they genuine believers in the message? Do they buy into the brand, I guess you could say? And Jesus seemed to think that there would definitely be people like that who weren't genuine believers, who didn't love the mission. And at one point he told the crowds following him, you just follow me because I can do stuff for you. That's the reason you're following, because of what I can give you. You don't actually believe that I am the Christ. So you aren't genuine disciples. You're not all in on the brand and the mission. And once he got into it with them, they ended up agreeing with his assessment of them. They agreed, and many of them stopped following him because they weren't all in the mission and the product. They weren't a part of that. That was Jesus' concern. He was regularly trying to get those who were following him to think through the actual commitment that following him demanded, the cost that only those who truly believed in him would be willing to pay. And so he would have in his own way those conversations. Now you have to love the product, you understand, right? You've got to believe in the mission. You've got to buy into the substance and everything that is, just like the guy that was interviewing me told me about that job. Jesus wants followers who are so committed and genuine in their belief that they would dedicate their lives to becoming a fully devoted disciple. And he describes that as, and we've talked about this in this series, he describes that as building a tower. A life that is a monument to faithfulness to God and the gospel, being all in on this mission. Now, his concern was that those who would follow him would build these half-built towers, that he described maybe as monuments or testaments to failure, to not planning and following through with it, that because they're accidental, they're unintentional with their Christian life. And so to avoid that and to build our lives into towering monuments, God calls his followers, his genuine followers, to be purposeful Christians, to be intentional Christians, and intentionally pursue being a fully devoted disciple until the day that God calls them home. Now, as we talk about these things, and we've been studying these things that make up a purposeful Christian, maybe you've kind of been with us through the series, or maybe even this morning, you're going to hear some things, and as we talk about them, and you might think, well, hold on a second, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for everything you're describing, right? I didn't ask to be a part of all of this, right? I believe in God. But you're talking about a much greater commitment, a much greater passion for God and for the Bible, for Christianity than I have. Kind of like me with that Red Bull interview. You may be hearing all this and say, well, hold on a second. I didn't sign up for all that. I'm not nearly as passionate about that as you're describing that I should be. And if that's true, if as we go through this, you've had those thoughts, or you kind of struggle with that, then that's a good indicator that maybe you should seriously investigate your belief. If you're struggling with the commitment, if you're struggling with the ramifications or the magnitude of it, of what it means to be a true follower of God, then maybe you're actually struggling with whether or not you believe in the Jesus of the Bible. Because the Jesus of the Bible would say, if you're going to be a genuine follower of me, you have to be a purposeful, devoted Christian who believes in the brand, who loves the product, who's all in on the mission. And so if you hear some of these things and think, man, I just don't know. I don't know if I'm all in on that. You're just describing something that doesn't fit me. Then maybe you have to investigate. Do I actually believe then in the Jesus of the Bible? Or is my belief or my faith in something a little bit different? So over the last few weeks, we've been looking at the blueprint for being a purposeful Christian. And I want to build a tall tower. And my prayer is, and my hope is that you want to build a tall tower too. I want to be a fully devoted disciple. And so how does that happen? How does that happen, that we build a tall tower, that we become a fully devoted disciple? And it starts with being purposeful about worship, right? That's the foundation. It starts with being purposeful about worship. And you must, and this is review, but you must purposefully and intentionally surrender internally, right, in your spirit, in your heart, and allow that surrender inside to express itself externally in your words, in your actions, right? That's worship. When what's inside comes out. And along with that, you must purposefully offer those spiritual sacrifices of worship together with God's people, with your people, with the church. That's the foundation, is worship individually, but also together. And then the blueprint also shows that we must be purposeful about community. That we must intentionally be and find useful partners in the building of each other's lives. We begin to worship individually and then together, and then as we begin to do that, we find those useful partners that begin to help us build our lives, and that we can help also build their lives as well. And so today we're going to look at a third part of the blueprint, which we're going to find in the letter from Paul to the Philippians. So if you want to turn to Philippians, we're going to be in chapter 2 this morning. Specifically, we'll be looking at verses 12 and 13. But Philippians chapter 2, and if you wanted to use your phone, your smartphone, you can absolutely use the YouVersion app, the Bible app there, and check us out there. Bethel Erie is what you would want to search for, but you'll find the verses there and any supporting texts that we go through. So we're going to look at this letter here to see what this third part of the blueprint is. And so Paul, so you understand, Paul, he's the guy that wrote this letter. Paul loves the Philippian church. When you read this letter, you can see it. Paul loves the Philippian church. He and his partner in ministry at the time, Silas, left in Philippi. That's the name of the town. They left some blood, sweat, and tears in Philippi in order to plant that church. They went through quite a bit, and you can read their story in Acts. They went through quite a bit to plant the church in Philippi. And because of their experience and their time with that church and just what they went through together, the relationship between Paul and this church was close. They had a close relationship. Paul loved the Philippian church. And the Philippian believers themselves maintained that relationship with Paul. You see it really being reciprocated. They kept in contact. They sent monetary gifts a couple of times to encourage Paul. In fact, he says, "When I was at my lowest, you were the only ones that sent encouragement to me, to the Philippian church." And in all, Paul visited the Philippian church three times that we know of, to visit them, to see them, to work with them. And they sent representatives to him on occasion as well. And so there's this ongoing relationship between them. And Paul loved this church. It was a useful partnership that developed. It was a close relationship, and you can see that because Paul says at the beginning of the letter of Philippians chapter 1, he says in verses 3 to 5, "I thank God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now." And so you can see the way that he says those things about that church, that he had a close relationship with them, right? He loved that church in Philippi. And so I want you to understand that relationship then as we look in what he tells them here, Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 to 13. And so let me read that here now. Verse 12 says, "Therefore, my dear friends, If you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. So Paul tells his dear friends, you see him say that there? His dear friends, remember, he loves this church. He loves these people. And so he tells his dear friends to obey, right? And obedience, in this case, he says, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, continue to. In this case, obedience, Paul defines as working out your salvation. He says, dear friends, you've got to obey. And in his terms here in these verses, what he's telling them is, you've got to work out your salvation. That is obedience. Work out your salvation. And now, what Paul isn't saying, and I've mentioned this before when we've looked at these verses sometimes, what Paul isn't saying is that a person can earn their salvation by how hard they work, right? When he says, work out your salvation, he's not saying you can earn salvation by how hard you work or by how good you are. That's not what he's saying. And he's not saying either that a person can lose their salvation by a lack of work. That if you don't work out your salvation, then you don't have your salvation. He's not saying that, that you can lose it by not doing enough. That's not what he's teaching. When Paul uses this phrase, to work out your salvation, in this way, he's referring to a process. He's referring to a gradual change that takes place inside a believer as they are freed from sin's power. Sometimes we call that sanctification. For those of you that have been in church for a long time, you may recognize that word and kind of get where that's coming from then. Sometimes we call that sanctification, this process of being freed more gradually from sin's power, not from sin's penalty, right? That salvation was secured by Christ's death on the cross the moment you believe. But the power of sin and the residue of it in your life, there's still a struggle. That's why Paul says, I have a hard time doing the good I want to do, because there's still bad that's fighting against it. And so he's saying here, you know, this work out your salvation. It's a process of being freed from sin's power. In fact, Paul says that as they work out their salvation, you see it here in these verses, as you work out your salvation, then God works in them. As you work out your salvation, as you pursue this, God works in them to change their desires and to change how they live their lives, right? In verse 13, he says, as you work out your salvation, it's God who works in you then to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. He changes your desires. He changes, he helps you change your behaviors and how you live your life. And Paul is saying that the Philippian believers need to obey, and that means they need to unfold, they need to unpack the significance and the implication of their salvation. They need to discover, how did my salvation affect me? How does my salvation from sin's power change me and impact me? And how I should work and strive to bring to completion what was started by my faith. How can I complete the process, complete the journey? How can I move down that path that salvation, my faith began? How can I work out my salvation? This is the power of the gospel, right? This is the power of their salvation, is that it changes us. It moves us. It shifts our desires. And if it shifts our desires, then it shifts our behaviors so that we will and act according to God's good purpose. So he says they should pursue, his believers, as they obey, they should pursue greater sanctification. They should pursue greater holiness. Greater freedom from sin's power, the greater changing of their hearts, the greater dependence of God, this continued building of an even taller tower that is a life of faithful obedience to God and the gospel, Paul says, obey, keep working on it, keep building it, develop greater sanctification, develop greater dependence on God, develop this bigger tower, build another floor. So great, you've got 40 floors. Build the 41st. Keep building your tower. Keep working out your salvation and pursue these things. So what he's teaching the Philippians is the next part of the blueprint. A purposeful Christian continues to grow in their faith. Purposeful Christians continue to grow in their faith. The next part of the blueprint is growth. We worship, we find useful partners, and then we grow. A purposeful Christian continues to grow in their faith. And Peter, when he writes to his readers, Peter tells his readers that Christians start as spiritual infants. Right? Jesus has used that expression that people are born again. And Peter says that Christians start when they place their faith in Christ's death and resurrection to save them from sin. They start as spiritual infants, but they need to grow. Right? They need to grow beyond that infant phase. They need to grow up. Later on in Philippians, this letter that we're looking at, Paul makes it clear that even for him, and we've said this a few times, if Paul thinks that he needs to grow, then the rest of us probably do too. Because if we were to say there's one guy that really got the gospel, it's probably the guy that wrote letters about the gospel and maturity and growing in Christian faith. And Paul will even say that he even needs to, right? And so for all Christians, there's always more growing to do. He says it in chapter 3 of this letter, verses 13 and 14. He says, brothers and sisters, I don't consider myself yet to have taken a hold of it. He's talking about the prize of full maturity. I don't consider myself to have taken a hold of it yet. But one thing I do, forget what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. He's saying I'm pressing towards greater holiness. He calls it maturity. He's like, I'm going to push forward. I'm going to forget whatever I accomplished in the past. And sometimes we think, I just forget whatever failures you had in the past. But I think Paul is also saying, I'm going to forget my 40th floor, and I'm going to press on to the 41st floor. I'm going to ignore the fact that this is how high my tower is right now, and I'm going to build the next tower. I'm going to keep pushing, right? Because that's the goal, to continue to grow until the day that God has called us home. The truth is, Christians never arrive at maturity. The finish line is when God calls us home, and until then, we must, as part of the blueprint, continue to grow. With the Corinthian church, another church that Paul invested in and planted, Paul demonstrates some frustration when he writes to them because they're not growing like they should be. And he writes kind of in frustration, like, you should be more mature than this. You should have grown beyond this by now. And there's a reason that Jesus explains that when we become a believer that we're born again. Right? And that's a helpful word picture because that puts us in the mindset that we are now infants again. Right? We're infants, and infants need to grow. Infants grow into toddlers, right? And toddlers grow into children, and children grow into teenagers, and teenagers grow into adults, and adults grow into something more, I'm sure, if they were to continue to keep growing, right? But the idea is that you start at a very infantile phase, and you need to keep growing. And what we're seeing here is that believers need to continue to obey and to grow. That's what Paul is saying. You need to continue to obey and to grow. You need to unpack your salvation and complete what your faith started, and you need to be intentional about it. You have to do it on purpose. In fact, the Bible is full of encouragement and challenges for us to grow, right? Throughout the Bible, you'll see commands for Christians to grow in grace, grow in knowledge, grow in service, grow in love, grow in righteousness, grow in godliness, grow in discernment, grow in good works, grow in faith, grow in thankfulness, grow in self-control, grow in perseverance. That doesn't happen just by accident. You're like, oh, I accidentally just grew. Like, you've got to, what is your plan for that? What is, how purposeful are you going to be about growth and growing? All of those things contribute to building a tall tower. And Paul says, once you finish the floor, continue to build. Continue to work out your salvation. Continue unpacking it. Continue to figure it out. Now, here's the dynamic in Philippi, because this is where it gets a little interesting. They agree with him. The Philippian believers agree with Paul that Christians, they should work out their salvation, they should continue to grow. In fact, you yourself may be sitting here thinking, well, that makes a lot of sense. I agree with you. Christians should continue to grow. It makes a lot of sense. But here's a problem for Philippi, for the Philippian Christians. The Philippians and Paul, as we've said, were very close. They had a very close bond. But Paul seems concerned here. If you look at these verses 12 and 13, Paul seems a little bit concerned here that the Philippians have developed an almost unhealthy connection between their obedience and Paul's presence. You see what he says there in verse 12? He says, my dear friends, you've always obeyed, right? As you've always obeyed, not only my presence, but now much more, you can fill it in, you need to obey in my absence. Right, continue to work out your salvation there with trembling and fear. So you see this implication here that the Philippian believers obey more eagerly, or maybe obey better, or maybe at all. They only obey, and they work out their salvation when Paul's there, when Paul interacts with them. But when he is not there, the working of their salvation drops off. And you can see his concern there. He says, look, you obey when I'm there. You need to keep obeying, keep working out the salvation. That's what he means when he says obey. In my absence also, when I'm not there. And that's why he says that they need to obey even more. Right? Because that seems to be a struggle for them, for the Philippian Christians. Working out their salvation apart from Paul's influence. So when Paul is writing to them, or when Paul is with them, they're all about unpacking their salvation. It's pretty easy for them. They seem to be doing well with it and growing. With his help and teaching, they become more free from sin's power. They're under Paul's influence. They pursue greater holiness. They work on it. They unpack it. But when Paul isn't there, the unpacking stops. The striving for holiness stops. The pursuing another level of growth kind of lessens. And this is a problem that Paul says is going to be a problem for them in Philippi, that they need to obey even when he's not there, not just when he's there. But it's not unique to Philippi. This is a danger that is all too common for Christians as well. It's easy to lean too heavily on the physical ministry of the pastor and of the church and just live from Sunday to Sunday and depend on a good sermon for your growth and say, well, you're right. I absolutely need to grow. We need to grow and to grow up in my faith. That's why I come on Sunday, right? Because I'm going to hear a good sermon. I want a good sermon because I need to grow. But that's the potential there is to lean too heavy on that and just go Sunday to Sunday. Depending on that for your growth, that sole dependence on the pastor, on the church, on their teaching or others, maybe a teacher in the church, is not healthy, which is what Paul is pointing out to his readers, because he says not just in his presence, but also in his absence, they must work out, notice the way he says it, you must work out your own salvation, right? Continue to work out your own salvation. So a purposeful Christian continues to grow in their faith, and they take ownership over their growth. A purposeful Christian has to continue to grow in their faith. And if we're going to be intentional about it, a purposeful Christian takes ownership over their growth and says, it's my own salvation I need to work out. I need to be the one working this out and pushing myself and growing in my faith and not just surviving on the ministry of Sunday to Sunday of those who have influence in my life. Now let me say this, Christians do and should continue to grow by the teaching of their pastors in their church. Right? It's true that that's part of the blueprint. In case we don't want to have any misunderstanding here, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, God lays out kind of the structure and the intent behind the church that Christ himself gave apostles, prophets, evangelists, and the pastors and teachers in order to equip his people for the works of the service so that the body of Christ may be built up. And so Christians do and should continue to grow by the teaching of their pastors in the church. That's part of worshiping together, right? We mentioned that part of worshiping together is being given food on Sunday that will help you grow in your Christian walk. God has called men to shepherd his children and help them grow. However, even then, we need to take ownership over our growth. Even on Sunday, we need to take ownership over our growth. You need to own your growth. You need to be intentional and purposeful about your growth by coming on Sundays. And when you do, come here and expect to grow. Expect to be changed. When you come on Sunday morning, expect to have your salvation unpacked a little bit further. Have your desires and behaviors challenged, right, to push you to growth and changed, and then take some ownership of your own growth on Sunday morning and find ways to apply and to put into practice what you've heard, right? Come on Sunday morning expecting to get food and then plan to intentionally digest it when you leave and say, okay, how do I need to change then? What do I need to apply? What's going to be different so that when we leave through those doors, we're different than when we came in? We need to take ownership over our growth and not just sit here and say, well, that one didn't really speak to me. Now, granted, I would take that personally, but we need to take ownership over our growth and say, okay, what do I need to do? How can I begin the construction of the next floor based on what I heard this morning on Sunday? And leave intending to digest and apply what we've heard. James tells us that we should intentionally be doers, not just hearers of the word. James chapter 1, he writes this in verses 22 to 25, he says, do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, meaning the deception is you only need to listen. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom, the word of God, and continues in it, obeying it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Applying what you hear today is a way to take ownership over your growth as a Christian. And purposeful Christians grow. Purposeful Christians take ownership over their growth. And so my question is, are you actively owning and pursuing your own growth this morning? Are you taking ownership over it this morning? Yes, you should come, and our role as the leadership of this church and as the pastors of this church, our role is to feed you and to help you grow. We're the shepherds to do those things for you, but you also need to take ownership over that and say, okay, what am I going to do now based on what I heard this morning? What am I going to continue to do? What do I need to change? Right? And walk out owning your growth. However, Paul's concern, right, that's on Sunday. Paul's concern, though, is that the only way believers are intentional about growing is if he, Paul, challenges them or influences them, or in our context, the only way that believers are intentional about growing is coming for a sermon on Sunday, or tuning in on Sunday, or finding a good sermon to listen to on Sunday. It's a start towards growth, right? It's part of the plan. It's a start towards growth, but we can easily become too dependent on growing for 45 minutes on Sunday morning if we feel the sermon's good. And it doesn't take enough ownership over your growth if that's what you're doing. Just 45 minutes on a Sunday. A believer's growth should not be solely dependent on the church and the pastor. Now remember, Paul tells the Philippians, you have to work out your salvation. You have to work out your own salvation apart from the assistance of Paul, apart from the assistance of the pastors. Believers should continue to work out their own salvation. In the absence of the church, they should continue to obey, which again means in the absence of the church, you, when you're not here, should continue to work out your salvation, unpack it, investigate it, understand how salvation should change you and influence you, and how God can work to change your desires and to change your behaviors so that your life matches Him, so you continue to build the next floor of your tower. A purposeful Christian is intentional about this, is growing on their own and continue to give God the opportunity to work in their desires and how they live their life, and they're intentionally take ownership over their growth, not just by coming on Sunday, which is a way to own your growth, not just by walking out and assuming I'm going to apply this and change because of it, which is a way to own your growth, but also in the absence of the church on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, I'm going to keep going, and Friday and Saturday, owning your growth on those days, Monday through Saturday too. In fact, the word that Paul uses here when he says continue to work out, right, continue to work out your salvation, means that it should be on an ongoing, a sustained effort that does not stop. There are some words that they use in the Greek that is just a word that shows it happened one time and it's done. There's also words they use that show it will happen one time and it's done. This word that Paul is using shows that this is never going to stop. It is a continuation forever. You continue to work out your salvation, ongoing, all the time, sustained effort. Growing should be your life's work until the day that God calls you home. And I pray that that last day of my life, I am still trying to build that tower, trying to grow and give God one more chance to change my desires, to change my behaviors and influence those things. We should be building that tower until the day God calls us home continually, daily, monthly, yearly, for a lifetime. And that means if you want to build a tall tower for a lifetime, you must take ownership over your continued growth in your relationship with God. You have to own it. You've got to buy into the product. You've got to believe the mission. You've got to be passionate about it. You have to own it. The sermon and what the pastor feeds you should absolutely be a part of it. The blueprint to only be fed spiritually and pushed to grow on Sunday, though, doesn't take ownership over your full growth. How are you making use of the opportunity to grow today? And how are you taking ownership over your growth tomorrow? We need to take ownership over our growth. In fact, Paul says that we should continue to work out our salvation Monday through Sunday with fear and trembling. You see him say that there at the end of verse 12. He says you need to continue to work out your salvation with fear and with trembling. We should take ownership. You should take ownership. And this is what I'm talking about. You may be thinking, man, I didn't sign up for this though. Right? I'm not nearly as into that as you are, right? But here's what I was talking about. We should take ownership and continue to grow in our relationship with God on our own with fear and trembling. Or in other words, the reason that we should take ownership over our growth daily, not just Sunday to Sunday, but daily, every day in between, on our own, our ownership. This is my faith. I want to grow. I want my desires changed. I want my behaviors changed. The reason that we should do that is because we understand the significance of what happened and is happening to us through our salvation. We get how significant it is that we were once in darkness and now we're in light. And because we get how significant, like what actually happened at salvation, we take ownership, though, with reverence, with awe, with fear and trembling. I get what happened when I believed, so I'm going to own the unpacking of that salvation and what it actually means in my life. The reality that God gave everything to purchase our freedom from sin and offer us an eternal life, the complete reversal of your eternal destination, the freedom to no longer be a slave to sin at the expense of God's own Son, that should cause us so much reverence and respect for God and for that salvation that we want to see more and more change in our life, and so we take the reins of the growth. Like, I get, and I am fully aware, I was on a one-way path to hell. And at the expense of God's Son, He changed that. He corrected that course. I want to unpack that. Because I appreciate that, and I am in, with fear and trembling at the significance of that gift, that I want to change. I want to take ownership over my growth then. I want to take ownership over that relationship and say, all right, what does that mean then? How should I live my life because of that sacrifice? Taking ownership over your growth demonstrates that you appreciate the magnitude of your salvation, the magnitude of the forgiveness of your sins. And our response should be to want to make it our life's work then, to do all we can to grow in our faith and to grow in our relationship with God, and then do it. There is a movie that I cannot recommend, there's a scene in the movie, and I've mentioned this before, but it's perfect. There's a scene in the movie, it's a World War II movie, and there's a scene in the movie where this soldier and another group of soldiers have been sent on a mission to find another young man who is fighting in the middle of Europe, and because three of his brothers have died in the war and they want to bring him home so that his family doesn't lose all of their sons. And so I'm going to spoil it. It's a fairly old movie now, so don't get mad at me if you're going to go watch it tonight and be like, hey, wait a second, you just ruined that. In the process of finding him, the main character who's mission was to find this guy, he dies. He gets shot. And as he's laying there dying, the man he was going to save and going to rescue comes over to him, and they have this moment, and it's meant to be cinematic and emotional. And it is. And the one thing that this man says, that the soldier says that he's dying, is the young man comes up to him, and he's basically, he says, you know, why would you do this? What am I supposed to do? And this man, as he's laying there dying, he says, you make it worth it. Just live your life and make it worth it. Earn this sacrifice. And that's a really great image and picture for us to think as Christ is dying on the cross, and imagine him, you can't earn salvation. But imagining him say, as we look at him, what do I do now? Make your life worth this sacrifice. You can't earn the sacrifice. You can't earn salvation, but you can honor it and revere it and respect it and make your life worth the expense that was paid for it for your salvation. A purposeful Christian takes ownership over and continues to grow in their faith. Are you actively owning and pursuing your own growth throughout the week, Monday to Saturday? Are you owning it? So other than engaging on Sunday morning and expecting to be changed, what else can you do? Right, what else can you do to own it? And part of the foundation of our growth is worship, right? Worship together, which is why you're here. Individual worship should be part of that foundation. We daily surrender to God. acknowledge that He is Lord of our life and then demonstrate that by immediately by meditating and surrendering His words, surrender our words for His. And in Psalm chapter 1, this is how we can begin to take ownership over our growth. Psalm chapter 1, verses that may be familiar to a number of you. Verses 1 to 3, the psalmist says, "Blessed is the one who doesn't walk in the step with the wicked or stand in the way that sinners take or sit in the company of mockers." How do they avoid that? Right, that should be the question. How do they avoid not walking in step with them? Well, because their delight, in the next part, but their delight is in the law of the Lord. They meditate on His law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which grows, yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers, they grow. And so when we say, well, what can I do Monday to Saturday? How do I take ownership over my growth? We surrender our thoughts for God's words. We meditate on His words. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 4, Jesus makes this very, very bold statement and true statement. He says, "It's written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." And in context, He's saying, the authority for my life is God's words. And if it's the authority of our life that we can dig our roots into, like the psalmist says, if we dig our roots deep into them and it helps us bear fruit and grow, then we need to spend time meditating and focusing on God's words, not just this morning for 45 minutes, but throughout the rest of the week, Monday to Saturday. Surrender your thoughts to His by studying His thoughts. Spend time praying each day in communication with God, responding to His words. Read His words and then respond to them and communicate with Him and talk to Him. And I'll say this too, start small. Some of us, if you're in the boat where you're saying, man, I do a really bad job of taking ownership over my growth throughout the week, and I really have been living on a very small diet, Sunday to Sunday. Start small. Right, aim small, miss small. If that means that tomorrow morning you wake up and you read for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes in John or in Romans, just 5 minutes. Don't try to do 30 minutes. You're a burnout. You ever watch Survivor and they get back and they eat all that food all at once, right? Their stomach gets big and then they're sick. It's not gonna work out. You've got to build yourself up to that growth, and you've got to start small. And so maybe it's just praying for 2 minutes or 3 minutes or 4 minutes tomorrow or Tuesday and work your way up. But start small and begin to own your growth and say, man, okay, I'm supposed to meditate on this and then communicate with God what I'm thinking and how I'm reacting to this and what it's saying. Find Bible studies on YouVersion. If you have that app on your phone, there are Bible studies that it will give you questions to ask yourself and read it, and they don't take long. But find a Bible study on YouVersion. Pick a verse to memorize that speaks into your life right now. And just keep going over that verse and thinking about that verse and how it's impacting you. And talk to God about what it's doing and how it's challenging you. God's words are our authority, and we should depend on them. They are our root system for our growth. They have the ability to change us and challenge us and transform us and correct us. And so we need to interact with them in order to grow. Also, part of the foundation for our growth is community. Again, find, if you want to take ownership over your growth as an individual, find useful partners. We must take ownership over that growth. And so we've got to dig our roots into the Bible, communicate with God and what's going on in your life, find useful partners. Right? All of that is taking ownership on Monday to Saturday of your growth and building that tower. We must do this until the day that God calls us home. I've heard it said this way: the Christian life, from born again to mature and onward, is like driving a car uphill. Not easy, but you just need to keep your foot on the gas. There's no such thing as coasting. Right? If the minute you take the foot off the gas, you start going backward. Keep your foot on the gas. There's no such thing as coasting. It's true. We have to take ownership and intentionally grow, continue to grow for a lifetime. It's part of the blueprint for being a healthy, dynamic, fully devoted Christian. So, this morning and tomorrow, what are you doing to be purposeful and to take ownership over your continued growth in building that tower daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, for a lifetime until God calls you home? Let's pray.